everybody, welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about, could it be Satan? The episode that they named it, and there's an ellipses there. That's
I'm not booing you.
Why are you booing me? I'm right. That's the name of the show. And getting into Apocalypse a little bit deeper, just a instant recap in case you forgot the last episode. The end of the last episode, we just said none of the season up to this point matters. We're starting a new season.
Yep. Which will be a continuation of another season. It'll be great. We'll just do like all the seasons at once while not doing the season we promised you.
God, you're right. It is absolutely just Coven 2, which is fucked up because now they're actually doing Coven 2. So what does that make this?
Coven 1.5? Well, I'm joined.
Stealth Coven 2?
Warlocks. I'm joined by Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey.
Hello. Can you tell we're excited for this the new season premiere of the new season of American Horror Story, which is checking notes episode it's not one, huh? This isn't episode one of a season. This is episode four? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Somehow.
And like, what's extra crazy too is I'll spoil one thing in advance. This episode is like 97% flashbacks by weight. it's like almost nothing happening in the present, which makes me a little unconscionably angry, let's say. I really don't like that they end a season, go, here's a whole new thing you have to give a shit about, and then they're like, okay, but first, let me set the scene with a bunch of preamble, and I'm like, motherfucker, you had three episodes to do that, and you decided to just jettison them, jerking off about some fucking dumb bunker thing.
Oh. Yeah, it's rough. This is a rough time. I have to.
I think it's good. I think it's good that we're doing 9 seasons in one season, and also the first 3 episodes were not any of those seasons that we're doing. Actually, they're a completely unrelated thing. I think that's good. I think it's good to, you know, keep viewers on their toes by checking notes, completely changing what the show is about 3 episodes in and doing a new show.
And like the whole cast of the show and everything changes, you know? Why not?
In case you're thinking, but didn't they pick up like 3 people who got killed? And so there are some characters that bridge across from opening to the next part of the season. Just wait. They're literally going to turn to the camera and be like, no, we cast a spell of you're a different character now.
Yep.
So it starts with Langdon, who's the head nasty man, giving a voiceover talking about how the real Kathy Bates was, she adopted him, and she was just like always a Satanist who dressed like a weird butch goth.
that's how they explain it. They're like, that's why Kathy Bates is goth, is because she's a checks notes Satanist. That's it. And so the robot also has to be. The robot conveniently didn't mention that at all. The robot didn't mention it one bit. So the robot was just like, I'm a sick goth assassin lady. That's my deal.
But this one, she doesn't really seem like an assassin lady anymore, you know? Am I crazy there? Because it seems like now,
yeah, it's kind of baffling because, like, in this scene, Langdon is giving voiceover in, like, a flashback, and we find out that he's, like, talking to Meadbot, Kathy Bates' robot character from the first 3 episodes, who will functionally be a different character from real Mead. And he's like talking about how, like, I guess he was adopted by her. I don't remember if at some point it explains how
it's something
she
like
came
that
into possession of him, because he's like 17 or 18 in the flashback, so like a little old to be adopted, I think.
Yeah.
And, I remember a little bit about how this season ends, and I cannot tell you what's happening here. I don't remember how we get to this point, because I remember how it ends, and I don't remember how we got to this point retroactively.
Yeah, it's funny because you're saying that too, and I kind of remember, and then I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't make sense how you'd get from point A to B here. So yeah, I'm just as interested in everyone else as everyone else is.
I remember how this ends, and we're gonna get more retrospective about his like previous life, and I don't remember how we get to this point, so I cannot speak as to how he ended up in the custody of a Satanist goth lady, but he is, and like they're eating breakfast, I think, at the table in the kitchen, in her kitchen, and she like makes him say grace to Satan, which like I don't think is a thing that Satanists do.
No,
it's not just evil Christianity.
A lot of Satanism isn't like devil worship. It's about being like fully self-interested more than anything else. But I don't think we have time to fully go into this. But it's not like, it's not like the inverted Abrahamic belief. It's not just like we do everything that Christians do, but at the end, instead of saying thanks God, we go thanks Satan. Like that's not
right. Exactly.
They have a really, really Looney Tunes ass idea of what a Satanist is in this show. And they're not like the only show that's ever done that, but this show in particular is like, yeah, we know what Satanism is. And every time there's a Satanist, it's either a real life serial killer or Kathy Bates dressed as like a goth butch lesbian who emphatically tells every single person she comes into contact with, and that is not an exaggeration, that she loves Satan so much, dude. She loves Satan so much. It's like her only character trait. And the thing is, like, you might be thinking, like, oh, well, like, is she like an eccentric lady otherwise? No, she's just like a lady, but like, she does bring up Satan like a lot. She brings up Satan the amount of times that if someone were bringing up, let's say, Jesus, for example, that much in conversation, you'd be like, okay, relax.
She brings up Satan like other people like bring up CrossFit. Or like, you know,
being a vegan,
where it's like, okay, is this like your only personality trait? Or like, they'll talk about her behind her back, like, hey, did you hear Mia's a Satanist? Like, no shit, is she? You know, like, and that's the joke. All her friends.
How do you know if Mia's a Satanist? Don't worry, she'll fucking tell you.
Exactly.
She does it like coyly too. She's like, you know, she'll be like saying like little bits like a dad would do, like, oh, you know, the big guy downstairs, nudge nudge, wink wink. Like, no, Kathy Bates, that's not how Satanists interact with the world.
Maybe that's the title of the episode. Like, you're with your friends and it's like, oh my god, I got stuck talking to Mead. Oh, what'd she bring up? Could it be Satan? Like, oh yeah, that's it, you got her. Exactly right.
Real. I get that. Maybe that's, they're not smart enough to have done that in joke, but I feel that is kind of what they were like going for with her character, but I don't think they're doing it like ironically. I think they're doing it fully with their chest, being like, no, this is what Satanists would be like. Yeah, for real. And also, Langdon doesn't think this is weird, by the way. Langdon's like, oh yeah, that's normal. It's fine that you made me pray to Satan. And then she's like, she says something I don't even remember. Oh, he's like scarfing down the food. Like, he's going like feral on the food. He is chowing down. And she's like, the last person who liked my food that much was my first husband, who I poisoned. You know, as you do when you're feeding someone food, you mention that you killed your first husband by poisoning them. You know, the thing we all do.
Like, because I'm a Satanist, you know, hence evil, you know.
Yeah.
If I haven't mentioned it yet, right.
Yeah, Satanists are like, checks notes, praying mantises, ? And he's like, he's like already eaten half the food. Like, you're not going to poison me, are you? And she's like, I won't do that if you clean your room. I'm like, so do you just bring that up at every breakfast? Because he doesn't seem like too shaken by this. But the fact that he has a room here indicates that, like, he's clearly spent a pretty significant amount of time with this lady. So, like, is she dropping this for the first time at breakfast? Or is this, like, a thing that she just says every time maybe, she goes?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe this is how she gets away with the poisoning. Is she's just like, yeah, I might poison you. Like, every single meal to the point you're like, whatever. And then eventually she does poison you and you're like, fuck, it was finally now, huh? I was just so sick of hearing about it.
Yeah, I never thought she'd actually do it.
Right, I guess you can't say she didn't warn me. Good one.
The disclaimer, the Kathy Bates disclaimer. Yeah, and he's like, did you actually kill your husband? And she's like, no, I killed three of them, actually. I killed the three of them. And I'm like, okay, Miriam, like, at this point, the common denominator, because she says something about, like, you have to know when to let the, like, the bad ones go. And I'm like, you're the common denominator at this point. I think maybe you need to do some soul searching. Maybe you're the problem. Because it's been,
yeah,
it's always been you that's been the one who does the killing. You know what I mean?
Well,
one husband,
okay.
Sorry. True.
One husband, I could see like some reasoning maybe you could get to. Two, it's already like, come on, now you're just doing it for fun. And then the third one's like, get the fuck out of here. You enjoy it now. Just admit it. You're doing it on purpose. You're finding husbands to poison.
Yeah, because of Satan. That's what Satan would want. That's what Satanism's about.
Signing a prenuptial agreement that says there is no antidote.
And them just agreeing to it anyway. Them being like, yippee. Yeah.
I can't say no to
Kathy Bates.
I mean, kind of based. I get it. And then Michael's like, we're going to call him Michael because they're going to call him Michael for the rest of the show, unfortunately. Langdon.
Yeah.
Michael Langdon. Michael is like, that's evil. And he kind of just says it like neutrally, which is like a crazy thing to say in response. Because either that's the kind of thing, if someone tells you they've killed three of their husbands and you believe them, for all intents and purposes, just being like, hey, that's evil, very neutrally, as if you found out that like they voted for like a president you didn't like, instead of being like, holy shit, what the fuck? Is like kind of a weird reaction. And then she responds to that by saying, and I'm not paraphrasing, this is what she says verbatim, hell yeah, I'm a devil mama. Which did cause me to physically recoil in a way that I didn't know I could do.
Mommy needy Satan. Mm-hmm, yeah, rough
mommy
shit.
Needy Satan. It's so bad. And I'm like, wow, this is such a character you've made, American Horror Story. The lady who's too into being a Satanist, but is also like someone's suburban mom and likes to do like suburban mom things. It's a lot. It's
also
so
like
much.
Doesn't understand that in middle America, like declaring yourself a Satanist repeatedly is gonna get you weird fucking looks from the locals.
Oh,
like
yeah.
She just doesn't get it, as we'll see later when she goes to a butcher shop and it's just like, we'll get there.
I told you, so, I love Satan.
So we're back in the present, and it's revealed that Mike's explaining, or sorry, Michael Langdon is explaining all of this to Robomead, to just like say, here, this is why you are the way you are. You're programmed like my Satan mom, I guess. And yeah, so I guess the real Miriam was a Satan worshiper. I'm still unclear if the agent of Mossad was just like, we put that in here to give her combat skills. Or if that was also default. Because it really could, like, is it just like a Matrix situation of just, you know, making her think she was an agent of Mossad and having her be like, I know Kung Fu. She's like, that's the only explanation I have.
She doesn't need to, though, right? Like, as long as you're a robot, you can have, like, strength and shit, you're done. You know, like, we don't need, like, okay, she needs kung fu too, especially for a fucking horror story, you know, like there's not going to be a lot of action, I hope. Well, actually,
what do you
action.
Mean the Terminator was so much scarier when it did a hot flip kick?
Just like Kathy Bates. Yeah, because he's like, I gave you all of Miriam's thoughts, and I'm like, okay, so like that means that like the memories that she was having had to come from him to a certain degree. And we only got to see, like, that one flashback sequence that she gave us, which means that they're probably insinuating that that stuff is what he gave her, question mark. Which, two questions primarily, a lot of questions overall, but like two pressing ones. Hey, Michael, what was up with the agent of Mossad thing? What was that about? And then the second one being, why was the only other memory you gave her of a guy grabbing her boob at the movie theater?
These I thought are... you were asking me very seriously for a moment, no. I just want to say, but anyway.
me taking so, all the Michaels around and being like, hey, right. Listen, yeah. Listen.
Yeah, two-thirds of the fucking call, yeah.
Yeah. me getting this podcast back on track. Listen, Michael. yeah.
And then, I just sent a shiver up my spine. Don't like that.
I know. It's right. It's that weird. It's like nobody calls you Michael unless they're odd or there's that like kind of tinge of like, I have something to ask you serious. And,
hey,
you
fucked up, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To really add some weird vibes, I should just start calling Michael Langdon Mike to really, really throw off the vibes.
Call him Mikey. And then we'll both be cringing into the grave. Yeah.
I'll just call Mikey. Odd my little like sneer toward nobody in particular. Just like, Good. Yeah. All right. Well.
It's old Mikey Langdon.
He says he's remaking the world after the nukes and all that, and he needs her help, and he loves her because she's his robo mom, Satan worshiping robo mom or something, I guess.
Can a robot worship Satan?
So he starts changing his. I think so. Yeah.
Can a robot have religion? Probably. Can Jesus Christ's blood save a robot and send them to heaven? Is this what American Horror Story was getting at?
Wait, I played Near Automata. Yes, to all of it.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, we're not quite to the point of Near Automata where we've gone from can a robot be human to can a human be human, but I think we're like getting there. I think we'll get there soon.
I don't think
we'll
get there. I don't think that thing's coming. I think we're stuck on what is a robot again? Like, you know, for a while.
Yeah, what is a robot? Agent of Mossad?
Do you need to give them a backstory? Are they like people or what? Like, you know.
Oh, now we're getting into Detroit Become Human. Now we've gone a whole new direction. Now there's going to be a QuickTime event. I'm going to fail.
Time to kiss a robot and end racism. But for now, Langdon, sir, he has to change his clothes because he's gotten blood all over him or whatever. And he puts on like a little like velvet over like dining coat. It looks dumb. I'll say it. It looks dumb. And he has a little like Jedi moment of just like sensing a disturbance in the Force. And he goes, there's a powerful mage nearby. To which Meade goes, everyone's dead. And he goes, no, they stopped being dead. That's a thing wizards can do. So then it cuts back to the witches. And they just made a couple of the characters stop being dead. They're all very confused. And then they say the line that made me more pissed off than anything, because I was like, well, at least Coco and Mallory and
Dina,
were like,
Dina.
Like, hey, at the very least, those characters carry over from the first half of the show till now. So there's that continuity until the fucking Supreme looks dead in the camera and goes, don't worry, you were different people before because we cast an identity spell, which means you thought you were someone else entirely, but now you're a different character. So, like, don't worry about anything you did in the previous episodes. It's not relevant. You're functionally a new character. Why did we do this? Why did we do this?
Yeah, and it's funny because earlier in the podcast, Ty was like, they cast a spell that changes everything. And I bet you all thought it was a joke. But no, he literally did that. So, yeah.
They literally, yeah. It's like, we cast a spell of be a different person. Like, legitimately, they're like, yeah, Mallory, we made you fucking suck till now. You can stop sucking. Now.
It's also, this is like the only time they're really going to address it, too, is they're going to be like, yeah, we put you under an identity spell. And in this 30-second scene where they explain, like, yeah, you were a different person, and then we gave you amnesia on purpose so you'd be a different person for this? all of in this one 30-second scene, they will have two of the three characters. So here's the three characters that are going to appear now. The new Coco, the new Mallory, and Dinah. So Dinah is the one I'll address first, because I have a lot to say about Dinah moving forward. Dinah didn't get hit by the identity spell. Dinah was always Dinah, and she will not shut up about it for the next 5 minutes about how she's like, actually, I am the same person that you put under the spell, question mark. I knew that this was gonna happen. I've never not been me. And it's like, okay, well, we'll unpack that later, I guess. And then we have
him. I yeah. always was him. Yeah. And I will continue to be him.
Yeah, like, she really didn't even get, I think the implication is she didn't even get put under the spell. She just happens to also be a witch who was in the, like, bunker because she was rich as, like, God himself, I guess, for being Oprah. And, like, she didn't know she was gonna get resurrected, nor does she want to, and she will not shut the fuck up about that moving forward. Then we have Mallory, who just has full amnesia, doesn't know who she was before she got put under the identity spell, doesn't remember what happened when she was under the identity spell, doesn't remember anything, and is just super out of it, doesn't remember anything about what's going on, or, like, who she is, past or present. And is like, where am I? Just fully, functionally a blank slate of a character. And then we have Coco, who is the maybe the most confusing of the three, who comes sauntering out.
She's still acting
out.
Like Coco.
Yeah, yeah, she comes sauntering out, and she's like, I can't believe Brock put a knife in my head. And I'm like, okay, so, like, did you know Brock before the identity spell? Or is Brock an after the spell addition? And if that's the case, like...
It's just needlessly confusing, because it's like, then why don't you just do amnesia so that they can keep the same personalities and everything and just forgot the part where they're witches, and then we can just stop there. But then, like, they kind of have to make Mallory more complicated for some reason.
Oh, they're going to make Mallory so goddamn complicated. But then, like, they have Coco do things where she's like... where she clearly remembers Brock, and I'm like, okay, so, like, Brock either has to be a pre-amnesia addition who, like, I guess decided to go along with it once she started becoming a different person, or she met him after, in which case she fully remembers everything about other Coco, like the mirror universe Coco or whatever. Like, she fully remembers being Coco.
I would even just be like, fellas, we've all had it where, you know, the pussy too good, and even when your girl gets amnesia and stops being a witch, you just stick with it. But, like, she explicitly is like, I'm bad at sex and I throw up if a penis touches my mouth. So, like,
I will eat your ass, though, if you ask me. And then that raises another question. All of that aside, hey, where is Brock, actually? Because he just kind of, like, killed Coco, and then we didn't see him again.
I was wondering that the whole time, because yeah, he is just gone after that, and there's no, like, anything given. You're not gonna get an answer.
An apple,
right? Yeah. Do you think he, like, walked into the living room and saw that everybody was dead and was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here?
Maybe, yeah.
Or worse, he walked in and was like, oh shit, free apples.
You just see his body on the pile. Oh, Brock. Because, you know, like, a guy who had been forced to live outside in, like, the wastelands wouldn't just give up, like, a cool new safe place to live. Especially if everyone was, like, dead in it. I'd be like, okay, sick, new house, I guess. I would have to do something about all these bodies, but...
Like a fortress with, like, multiple layers of protective gates and shit? Yeah, no, you would probably be like, I live here now. I'm now the owner of this vault. Yeah.
You don't know that this place isn't good against the canker pus monsters. I'll never let that go. I'm sorry. I hate that so much. But yeah, like...
The year is 2027. Slow Beef is still referencing the canker pus monsters. He will not let it go. And honestly, he shouldn't.
It's so bad. God damn it. Anyway.
Yeah, but we don't know. We don't know where Brock went. And I, honestly, I'll be so real with you. I don't know if it ever comes up again. So
no shot, no shot. Yeah, there's no shot Brock is ever mentioned again. Like I would put down $150 right now that Brock's ass doesn't show up ever again in Apocalypse.
I feel my bet. I really don't remember. My bet is there's going to be some one-off thing where they need like a red shirt character. You know what I mean? Just for something like somebody's got to trip back. The Langdon's explosion trap if you get too close for him, and then they just shut. Like Brock wakes up, and then it's done. And so, they're like, oh yeah, Brock. Thanks, I forgot him.
I fully do not remember. Like they're from like this episode, or I'll say like the next episode up until like maybe the finale. There's a huge empty space that I don't remember the fine details about, but I do know a very specific plot beat that's going to be revealed. And I will say I don't remember if Brock is brought back in any capacity or is ever even mentioned again, but I do know that there is going to be a plot beat a few episodes from now that could make literally fucking anything possible. So I'm not going to say it's not a possibility because it's going to be dumb when it happens.
Great.
Alas, right now we don't know where he is. And then like Madison makes like a weird passing after like Coco is like, I can't believe Brock stabbed me in the head. Madison's like, oh, Coco is the weakest of them all, and she's handling it the best. And I'm like, even a sarcasm, that doesn't make any sense. You just, like,
fucking power
said
scalers.
A thing weird. Yeah. Like, you just said something weird. And then Myrtle does Myrtle shit.
Also, like, the witches aren't really, like, stronger or weaker. With the exception of the Supreme, they just do different things, right? Like,
yeah.
If it's... one girl just can kill dudes by sleeping with them, and like, are you saying she's not the weakest? Because I'll be real, I'm pretty sure she's the weakest.
No, remember they all kind of had like a little bit of a bunch of powers at the end of Coven, with the exception of like two of them.
Right.
They all had like a smattering of various powers, but like not all of them, which will be very confusing. In fact, later they're going to introduce new magic rules in this episode, which will make it even more confusing. Because there will be an actual scaling system. Damn, if only we had that in season 3.
Also a strange hormonal component, which was probably not necessary.
Yeah, that's very odd. Like, there's just no reason at all for it. Yeah.
Your magic is worse if you're full of cum. We'll get there.
Everyone knows this. Yeah.
So Myrtle goes and does a little Myrtle aside of, oh, it'd be so much easier to recover if we had something fanciful and goofy. And it's like, shut the fuck up, Myrtle. God damn it. I'm so over you and you just got here.
Yeah, Myrtle sucks more this time around. Like, I remember kind of not liking her, but, like, feeling, like, all right about her.
She was interesting. She was an interesting addition because all the other witches kind of are just, like, a person.
Also, like, she was, like, still, like, she was a strange advisor, right? But she, like, was an elder advisor. She was someone who had wisdom on top of her eccentricities. As opposed to right now, where she's just off in her own fucking universe. And it's really annoying. It's like having a random person, like, roll in the door and start doing monkey cheese shit. And you're just like, shut the fuck up. We have a story going on. What are you doing here?
It feels like, now that, like, the Supreme's there, it's like, oh, I got nothing to do. I might as well just annoy the shit out of everyone, you know? And it's like, you've overstayed your welcome now, Myrtle. I'm sorry, but
Myrtle is Myrtle is one of the more eccentric characters from Coven. She will not be eccentric in comparison to other characters we're going to meet, so she just kind of becomes like an annoying version of like one of them,
right?
And it's a lot, and it makes Myrtle kind of insufferable, frankly. But going back to Dinah, so Dinah doesn't like the witches. She doesn't like hanging out with them. She doesn't want to be on their team. She isn't thankful that she got revived, which I'm like, if you're such hot shit, then why did you get murdered by the stupid lady's apple plan, huh? Why, if that, you would still be dead right now if she didn't revive you. And then Madison makes like a passing remark about like, oh, because Dinah's like, I'm not going to help you defeat anybody, because Cordelia says something about them having to like defeat evil or something. And Dinah's like, I'm not going to help you fight anybody. I'm not on your team. And then Madison's like, you can't defeat anyone because you use voodoo. And I'm like, I think the voodoo like users in season 3 were like pretty strong. Like, they knew
you
necromancy.
All liked Queenie, right?
Yeah.
Like, you liked Queenie. She was great. That Queenie was awesome. You liked her. Why are we going back to being bigoted again? Because that's what it is, right? It was supposed to be, like, an analog for racism. So she's just back to being racist again, which, like, great. Cool.
Yeah, like, Marie Laveau, like, summoned a whole army of, like, zombies in season 3. Like, that's pretty strong magic, if you ask me. That's, like, stronger than what, like, most of the cast can do, I think.
Than sleeping with someone and killing them? Because I feel like that, you don't even need to be a witch to do that. You can just have a knife.
Or an STD. And that'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah, or an STD. Yeah. Chlamydia. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's just so that we know, like, why would Dinah not want to hang out with the witches? And it's like, oh, because we're doing the voodoo versus witches thing again, I guess. We wanted to make sure there was a character that, like, represented that group for some reason. The voodoo users, which are not the same as the regular magical witches, I suppose. And then Langdon, like, interrupts them and is like, how can you expect to defeat me when I've already won? Fortunately, he doesn't talk like this all the time. It's only in the not flashbacks that he talks like this. I don't know why he picked up speaking like this, but here we are. And then he's like, have you seen the state of the world outside? And then Myrtle does come up with like one kind of quippy line. And I was like, okay, I'll give you that one. And she's like, yeah, it's almost as bad as your dinner jacket, but at least the world can be saved. And I'm like, okay, that one was kind of a heater. That's the only time Myrtle gets like the slightest bit of a pass, I guess, because that was a pretty good comeback. And then the witches are like, we're going to stop you. And then, like, as they're giving their, like, little motivational speech about how they're going to, like, do the magical girl thing. And
not
like,
me.
Yeah.
Not me. Can you, when you mention that you're going to stop the warlocks and you say the witches and the witches and the other ladies, make sure you say not Dinah. Can you say not Dinah every time? If it's not too much trouble, just make sure they know, nah, I'm not involved.
Yeah, the exact opposite of that one meme that's like, when you say the girls and the gays, can you also include Daniel?
Clyde.
Yeah.
Can you get Clyde in there?
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of that, where Dinah, every time the witches are trying to talk to Michael, she's like, not me, though. I know that no one asked, but not me. I'm not involved in this. Don't, do not involve me in this. And I'm like, no one's even, like, looking at you. You're in, like, the back of the room. No one's even, like, looking at you or talking to you. And it is such a bizarre character trait to give a character of, like, them. It's like it's literally like an I think you should leave bit of, like, guy who isn't being asked questions, like, inserts himself into someone else's conversation. It's so weird. it's so strange. And then Myrtle says something passively like, I always thought the world would end with fire and ice, not witches and warlocks. And I'm like, hey, Myrtle, what the fuck does that mean? Like, what do you mean you thought the world would end in fire and ice? Like, Avengers Endgame? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
I think she means Game of Thrones, actually. Because, you know, right? Song of Fire and Ice. So, you know, she thought, she's a big fan, basically. She thought, basically, when the world ended, that's when the books would finally come out. That's the reference.
Oh, done. I thought it was literally a reference to, like, honestly, the first place my brain went was the beginning of Twilight, where they read, like, these violent delights or whatever have violent ends, and then they give that whole that whole monologue.
I should have known they stole it from another horror franchise, you know?
Yeah. That
being the right explanation, so yeah.
True. Another gothic horror.
George R.R. Farton. That's what I think of this.
Oh, true. True. But Michael thinks it's cool because he, like, smiles at it. And then that's the opening sequence of the television show. I know we talked about it for a long time, but it is worth, like, saying that it was just, like, a long opening sequence. It was, like, a 10-minute opening sequence, which is, like, not typically what American Horror Story does. There was, like, a lot in it. There was, like, two opening sequences and one opening sequence, which is crazy because they're going to be super willy-nilly with the pacing from this point onward.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, baby.
Yeah, because it, like, starts with a flashback and then does a little bit of present, and then they're like, okay, now do the opening, and then it's all flashback from here, I think, or, like, 90% at least.
Pretty much.
Flashing back to when this school was a school, because remember how they said it was a boys' school previously? That's right. It's a fucking narrative show, because it was a boys' school, and there's a little lad ringing the big bell. And they're doing magic, and by doing magic, I mean they're, like, reading a book in a circle, and they're just like, yeah, read that book.
Boy magic.
Read the shit out of that book.
Boy magic. That's how you do boy magic. Boys need books for their magic.
It's just very nerdy magic, like, just read, nerd, get out of here now.
The magic of the library!
The magic of knowledge.
I love my local library. So they're all reading in a circle, and the head mage there, is his name Behold Chiblis? I'm sorry, is that correct?
Behold Chibli, yes, his name is Behold Chibli.
Behold Chibis? Chiblis?
Billy Porter. This is his first appearance in American Horror Story, but I think he becomes a recurring cast member.
I think you're right. I feel like I've seen him in another American Horror Story. Yeah, absolutely.
He's really fun.
Yeah, I love Billy Porter.
From the little time I've seen him on screen, he's great. He's super fun. He's engaging to watch. He brings, like, a very specific energy, and it's good. I like him in this role. I think he's good.
Yeah, and I like his name. So we're meeting boy witches. And all of the, like, I put in my notes the head mage, but I guess there's, like, five of them, like, five head mages. It's not, like, a supreme situation. There's gonna be one that shows up that feels like maybe he's a little bit more important than the other four, but, like, only because he has, like, a sash around his neck. But all of them are gonna be quite flamboyant, like, well-dressed men who are their own characters. They all have a pretty strong personality. And Billy Porter, Behold Chibli, is, like, the kind of sassy, like, very witty, smart aleck professor of magic, I guess, is how to describe him. Because then there's going to be, later we'll meet, like, Baldwin, who's, like, the kind of soft-spoken, very sweet, like, very nice professor. And then John, who's John in comparison to Behold Chibli and Baldwin and Ariel the Damned or whatever the other guy is. Grandmaster Ariel, who will show up later.
Doesn't he, like, John have a weird name, like John Henry or something like that, too?
John Henry Moore.
That's it. He sounds like almost like one of those, like, old, like, people you read about in history, you know, where it's like, oh yeah, that guy who crossed the bridge.
Or, like, 18th
right?
president that nobody remembers the name of. Yeah.
He's someone
or a
I
guy
got
who
quiz
like
on, yeah.
shoveled he shoveled coal into a train until he died, but the train made it on time or some shit. Yeah.
Thanks, John Henry Moore. You're my best friend. Which he's not like an old timey guy, to be clear. He's just like a man. And what's funny is like his whole character is like he's like the dark, kind of broody, like pragmatic and practical, level-headed professor. But he's also, like, a huge hater. Like, that's, like, his only personality trait is that he's, like, a massive hater. And it's pretty funny. But, yeah, so, like, Behold, they will go back and forth between calling him Behold. Like, the other professors will call him Behold. But sometimes the Grandmaster will call him Chiblis. that's who we're talking about if we say either of those things. And like Shiblis is like teaching a class, I guess, in the library. That's the thing, is like they didn't bother. Here's American Horror Story at its finest, is like they're like, okay, this is back when it was a boys' school. It's not any different than it is now. And unfortunately, we only have the library set piece. So like, no classrooms. We're just going to use the library as our only classroom for this Chex Notes boys' school where boys learn things and have to do classes. So they're in the library. The same one, the same library that all the other scenes in the library up until now have taken place in. And the boys, like, this is like an older class of boys because we see all sorts of boys running about. There's like older boys, there's like little boys. There's all sorts of boys, just a smattering of boys. I assume since that they can like be brought in when they're kids, because it's magic school, that you'd also maybe have to have like regular school also. You'd maybe have to teach them like math or science at some point, but we don't have any classrooms, so good luck, I guess.
Right. Nothing but magic. It's fine.
And by nothing but magic, I mean that there's roughly six, like, 17-year-old boys all, like, crowded up in the middle of the room around a plate of, like, jiggling glass, question mark?
It's like a bunch of glass shards that are kind of undulating a bit, yeah.
Yeah, just kind of, like, wiggling a lot. And they're going to be doing, they're going to be looking at it and focusing real hard for, like, this whole scene, which is crazy because at the end of this scene, they're just going to, like, do it in one. So it kind of seems like they're just fucking around at this point. And they're all just kind of, like, mumbling at it, and Behold is, like, giving some who cares speech about like, hey, when you do magic, it's in your heart and in the universe or whatever. And like we're following the POV of some guy named William Banks. And I don't think this guy becomes relevant ever. But they make sure we know his name. And he like, she shows up late to the class, I guess, because he shows up like when they're already talking to the glass. And then Shiblis like yells at him about being late. And I'm like, but we followed his POV and he went right to class when the bell rang, when everyone else went to class. Because that's the opening of the scene, is that little lad ringing the bell and everybody scurrying off to class. We follow his POV straight into class. Like, we watch him go from point A to point B. How is he late? Why is he late? He left the same time everyone else did. We watched him do it. Maybe the bell guy is to blame for this. Maybe we need to fire the little lad who rings. Why does a little lad get to ring the bell? That doesn't seem like a little lad job. I don't know how public school works. I was homeschooled.
We don't have a lot of manual bells, I find, in public school. We were kind of past the point of manual bells.
Damn.
I think, like, very occasionally there's, like, a, hey, like, you know, for today's, like, announcement for lunch, here's third grader Sally or whatever. You know what I mean? But, like, that's, yeah, so I guess.
Or, like, a little, a single ding-dong over the PA system to let you know this period is over, and then another ding-dong to let you know the next period has begun. So that you'd have time to like pass in the halls and stuff. But yeah, no little lad bell. It was done by, it was computers, things are these days, but it was computers. So he shows up and he's getting chastised for being late. And then in like the same breath, he's like, also, where's your fucking wizard tome? Where's your goddamn book? And he's just like, oh, I forgot my book. He's like, you forgot your book again, which like, then he just, like, force grabs another book from the library and puts it in his hands and is just like, here, use this one. And I'm like, how many copies of the same fucking book do you have? And why?
Yeah, why not just
Why do we care about him not having one?
Why not just keep them in the library? If the library is our only classroom, why not just keep the books that everybody has to use in the classroom? That way they don't lose them. They, like, live in the underground bunker. You're just inviting people to, like, forget their shit by not having it readily available. It's a lot.
Also, do you need the book? Can they not just share a book? Can you not just know the words? Is the book the magic? Because then there's a whole different thing, right?
I feel like that should be a spell, right? Like, mind reading's probably something advanced, but just like, hey, book, getting the knowledge by holding the book and reading without seeing the words seems like, you know, that seems like a gimme. Like, why not give people that? But whatever. What do I know about magic?
Am I conflating American Horror Story Season 3 with another, like, some kind of media that has to do with witches? It wasn't there, like, a specific witch in Season 3 who, like... It was Myrtle, wasn't it? Who, like, had to tell the truth and, like, she had to read out of a book. Like, she couldn't just...
Oh, yeah.
She wasn't able to... Who was that? I don't remember. I think I might be thinking of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, but there is, like, a distinction in a lot of media of, like...
You know what it was? So
the tongue
there
thing.
There was a spell... Yeah, Myrtle, I guess, and that's why the guy cut out his tongue, Dylan McDermott.
Yeah,
Dennis O'Hare, you know, yeah, that's why he did that, so he couldn't testify against, not Cordelia,
Cordelia's mom. I remember that now. So, like, we've established that there are some, and she even says as much, like, the witch who only loves the truth. It's not Myrtle, it's another one on the council.
Who's
like the tattletale witch. Like, that's her whole deal, is she loves the truth. But, like, we see in a flashback that, like, there are certain witches who have to have a book and, like, read the spells to use them. So I guess you're kind of bitch made, right, is the implication, if you have to read out of the book to do magic, which they will heavily remind us that warlocks are in fact bitch made in comparison to witches, or at least that's the understanding by most people in this universe, which is crazy because they didn't have anything about that in season one or season three. I mean, technically season one of Coven, since this is season two of Coven, basically. There were definitely male witches in season three, several of them that we see in season three, but it will be hammered home for the next 30 minutes that warlocks fucking blow ass, dude. They suck. They're so bad at magic compared to witches.
This whole thing smacks of gender. That's what I'm learning. So, as they're using the books, and they make the glass turn back into an orb, another one of the warlock council comes in, Baldwin, who comes in and goes, "Hey, you've been summoned. The big man is here." And he goes, "Ooh, the big man." They run over to Chibi's office, and waiting for them is John Henry Moore, who is Will Drake from season 5, the therapist or whatever. I like his character in this too. Like, he does pretty well, I think, of being a little bit like a little sassy, but not like, oh, like he's very how would you put it? He's not trusting implicitly. Like, he's very credulous about
everything. He's a hater. He's a hater.
He's a hater.
He's a hater. He's a credulous hater. He loves hating. If everyone else is super into something, he's like, I don't know, guys. I don't know about this one. For what it's worth, he will be right. Like, he's the only one who's not stupid is the problem. Like, everyone else is dumb, and he's like, well, I would have been a hater about this either way, but it just so happens that I'm right this time. And, like, what's also funny is, like, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, to be fair, too, it does feel a little obvious, you know, you know what I mean? That, like, it's kind of like, I think you all should have been skeptical over the thing that John Henry Moore is, but, you know, I guess as long as we're here, you know, next time, maybe.
Someone has to remind the audience not to be stupid, and that's what John Henry Moore's character exists to be, is like, oh, you need to remind the audience that these guys are probably really dumb. And are being very dumb about something. So far, the wizards we've met are Behold Chablis, and then the one who brings him to his office is just named Baldwin. No last name, just Baldwin, played by B.D. Wong. For what it's worth, I love Baldwin. Baldwin is my special son. He's just a nice little fella. Baldwin's just excited to be there. Baldwin is like the nice dad. These are all, like, there's four of them, and they're all, like, a different kind of dad. And Baldwin's like the nice fun dad who takes you out for frozen yogurt on the weekends every weekend and has like a dad day with you. He's delightful and I love him. Mm-hmm. Then there's John Henry Moore, who's the alcoholic dad who doesn't remember your birthday, but he does love you. He's just kind of a piece of shit. And then there's Behold Chablis, who is your very flamboyant dad who will roast you for your fashion sense as a teenager relentlessly and give you a complex. And then we're about to meet the fourth and final dad of the Infinity Stones of Dads, Grandmaster Ariel, which is that is his character's name. And Grandmaster Ariel, played by John Briones, who is like an alum of a lot of Ryan Murphy, Brad Fulchick stuff. He's mostly in like American Crime Story and whatnot. I think this is his first American Horror Story like entry, but he has worked with him a lot. And I think he does, moving forward, also have some roles in American Horror Story. So, like, we meet John Henry Moore, and then you can tell by the way Chablis is, like, interacting with John that, like, they clearly know each other, but it's not, like, antagonistic. Like, they have, like, a relationship. Not, like, a romantic one, but, like, they have a relationship. Because he's, like, he's smoking in his office, and Chablis is like, why the hell are you smoking in my office? I thought you quit. And then John's like, you might need a cigarette after what I've seen. And then in the background, the chair swivels around and we meet Grandmaster Ariel, who's dressed like the evil Pope, question mark. Like he's got like a...
He's like halfway between like a warlock and Count Dracula. Like they really like drac him up a bit. Yeah.
Like the other guys are like John Henry Moore's wearing like a white button up shirt and like suspenders. So he looks like the more like modern goth, like an office goth. And then Baldwin and Chablis are both like fully gothed out. Goths who are like in their like 40s. Nice suits. Yeah, like professional goths. Yeah, like they're like
okay. Yeah. They I would say they are well-dressed men for sure. If one of them walked into a place I was working, I'd be like, "Damn, those are some guys who know how to take care of themselves." Like that's kind of the vibe they give off.
Yeah.
And then they've got this guy in the back who's just like, "Actually, I was really into the warlock iconography when I was growing up, so I do want a cape."
And a weird like those things that priests wear around their neck, like that big sash that they wrap around their neck that like hangs down. Like he has one of
the
those.
The bishop like kind of the vestment thing. I can't think of the name. Yeah.
He has one of those and that's how you know that like I guess he's like the one who's in charge. Like they don't act like he's in charge, but it's like implied that he's in charge. Like I think they're all technically all, cuz they even say later like we're all the same level. But, like, he definitely looks like he's the one that they're supposed to listen to. His name is Grandmaster Ariel. How could he not be the one that they listen to? It would be so crazy if he wasn't the one that they listen to. But I think they are all just, like, the same level of guy. I think he just really leaned into it.
They're the same level of magic potential, but I think there is still, like, a hierarchical order of...
Maybe it's like, command, maybe it's just like YouTube names. Like, you know how like you just have someone who's like, you know, I'm like Miles the awesome guy and he plays Tetris like pretty okay, you know, or whatever. But
yeah,
like, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just like, okay, Grandmaster.
Meet the council of warlocks. We have Behold Chablis. We have Baldwin and we have the Peanut Butter Gamer.
Mr. Beast. Do you think Grandmaster Ariel was like his rap name and he just didn't want to let it go? He's like, that also works for being like
we
a
love
warlock.
Casting spells.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
This also works for
legalize nuclear bombs.
Shadow Wizard Money Gang.
Shadow Wizard Money Gang. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's this whole episode. It's just Shadow Wizard Money Gang. We love casting spells. And, like, Baldwin's, like, so happy when Ariel turns around. He's like, yippee, my friend. friend Ariel's here. He's like, ooh, let's do like a party tonight for this with the students so they can meet you. Because he says so they can meet their like chancellor or something. And I'm like, isn't that Star Wars? Like, isn't that like political stuff? That's weird. and Ariel's like, no time for that, Goku. And he's like, you gotta watch this video of a police interrogation. And like, they even like, because you know that like people like me are gonna be like, hey, how do you have that video and why? And he's like, someone who's sympathetic to our cause at LAPD. I'm like, what cause? Being a warlock? You got somebody in the LAPD who's like, I got the warlocks on speed dial in case we need them for checks, notes, stopping crime, I guess. They just say that in passing of like, yeah, we got this from a guy who like supports our cause in the LAPD, I guess. And they show this interrogation video on this laptop, which the laptop appears to be from 1995. And the video that's playing on it, they just kind of use one of those filters that's like, this is a security feed filter over like some other like footage. And it's a hand cam footage, like it's a fucking found footage horror movie.
There are legitimately like low angle shots from the floor, which you don't put security cameras on the floor. That's not where they go.
And the camera's like moving around pretty actively as like stuff is happening. And like at the end, the police officer like turns and looks at the camera and says something to it. And I'm like, so do you, when you guys were like doing this interview, you just had a cameraman in there like running around getting like wide angles, like getting different like shots? Is that normal? Do you usually do that when you do an interview, an interrogation? Crazy. And like the police officer's talking to the back of, or somebody who we can only see the back of, who's clearly Michael Langdon. And he's like, how did you stab that guy 5 times? And then Michael's like, I didn't stab that guy 5 times. And then the officer, of course, does what every officer does.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, you won't find my fingerprints on any of the knives. I didn't do it. And and then the cop's just like, all right, well, I tried nothing and it didn't work. Time to beat a kid.
Time to kick the shit out of a kid on camera with a cameraman in the room. They're going to love this one. This is going to go over great in court. They're going to love this in court.
Cop looks at the camera, goes, world star! Just starts kicking this kid.
Like, he knocks him on the ground and starts, like, stomping on him and kicking him. I'm like, damn,
like, this isn't good cop, bad cop. This is no cop MMA cop.
This is, we found this guy outside. He doesn't even work here. He's not a police officer. We thought it would be funny if we let him interrogate this one suspect. Uh-oh, it's gone so wrong.
We figured we'd let Kimbo Slice have a try, you know?
Oh, no, it's gone off the rails. Everything is so bad now. And then it gets worse because as he's kicking the shit out of Michael Langdon, they're like, yeah, we've seen the movie. Carrie, and Michael Langdon uses telekinesis to shove the cop against like the ceiling, first the wall, then the ceiling, and he like breaks all of his arms, and then he drops the cop on the ground. The cop looks dead in the camera. That's not a joke. That actually happens. And the cop goes, "Help me!" And then his head explodes like he's in Scanners. Like a found footage film, not like a police interrogation.
Weaker VHS entry, yeah.
Yeah, a VHS entry from like one of the ones no one liked. And then right. No one talks about. Yeah, and then they like watch that and John's like, "How was that fucked up or what?" And he's like, "It's clearly a demonic possession. Like that's clearly a demonic possession. He doesn't have magic. Like he's doing like exorcist shit." And Ariel's like, "No. I think that kid's the provocateur." Provocateur? I don't remember what he says.
Provocateur.
Yeah. Which, like, also won't ever be mentioned again. And then he's like, that kid's going to be a sick-ass warlock. And John's like, Okay, but, like, regardless of that, like, he might be, like, a little bit evil. He did, like, explode that guy's head, and he was being interrogated for murder. So, like, is it possible that he might be, like, a little bit evil? And Ariel's like, that doesn't matter. I don't care. We need warlocks.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's cool. We need as many warlocks as we can get.
What are you, a pussy? Like, yeah, he's fine, all right? Get him in. Get this guy
so
out of
here.
So
he's a little evil. Who cares? Me talking about Michael Myers. Yeah. So he's a little evil. Who cares? And then...
Yeah, the shape of a guy I need on my fucking team.
Yeah. Get that bad boy in here. Get him a jersey. And I'm like, why? This was so important that you had to call a meeting? Like... There's not, like, dudes who just, like, learn they have superpowers or learn they have magic, like, all the time. Like, you have to call, like, an Avengers meeting whenever it happens. Like,
I guess so, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, well, it's weird because, like, Coven, they kind of implied that they're, like, a little hard to find until the end. And then it's like, no, everybody's a witch. But I guess the warlocks aren't there yet, where it's still, like, I don't know how to identify another warlock. So there's, like, six of them. I don't know.
Well, they make it, like, they really emphasize that it's a boys versus girls thing. That it's fully, like, a gender thing, which is, like, crazy. Because, first of all, at the end of the finale of season three, when Cordelia's like, magic is real, and we have a magic school, to the news, when we see that shot, there's, like, hella dudes in that line waiting to get into Miss Robichaud's academy. Not to mention Quentin from the fucking Witches Council. In season three, like, one of the three people on the Witches Council. Fucking Quentin. He was a guy. Regardless. And John's like, okay, but, like, I really don't think we should do this. I think this kid is bad news bears. I don't think that that kid knows magic. I think this is bad. And then everyone's like, no, but what if he's the alpha? And I started sobbing. When they said that, I started laughing so hard. I thought I was going to throw up. I forgot that the male version of the Supreme is called the fucking alpha in this show. That is so fucking funny.
That falsified study of wolves has done more damage to the masculine spirit than, like, almost anything. Like, truly. Like, wolves don't do that. There's not an alpha wolf. That's not a real thing. Stop saying it. What? Also, that if you call one of them the alpha, that by default makes you the betas, right? Like, that's what they're saying. They're like, we're the council of betas. And I'm like, you sure fucking are, you losers.
I know. That always kills me with that alpha. Just like, oh, that guy. I was like, but you're worshiping him. That makes you the... No, you're not another alpha. There can't be. That's the point. And if the wolf thing even were true, we're primates. It doesn't matter. It wasn't work. It's a different animal thing. Fuck!
Yeah.
Damn it. You guys put a lot more thought into that than I did. I thought they just were thinking of, like, the alpha and the omega from the Bible and thought it sounded cool.
It's my sigma energy is why.
That's episode. That's episode 10. We don't meet the sigma until episode 10. Don't you remember?
I'm really more of a delta wolf myself. Whatever. We'll figure out what that means later. Soon society will catch up with my shit.
They're about to introduce so many, like, magic rules of, like, no, if it's a boy and they're the supreme, then they're the alpha. But then we're going to find out that's not real because there's never been one. So that's, like, bullshit that they just made up, I guess. But then also there's,
make,
like,
up a guy.
Yeah, the alpha. And then, like, there's also going to be, like, a number system that's going to indicate, like, what level of magic you have. And then there's going to be, you still have to do, like, the Seven Wonders test. But not only that, there's also, like, a three-part test that's, like, for something else, I guess. It's so much. We've gotten through roughly 15 minutes of episode. There is so much episode left.
This is an episode. This is an episode.
It
I'll
is
just a, say that, yeah. Like,
it's like they tried to make a
movie.
It's
almost like there were three episodes before this where they should have put all this information, but they fucked around. And so now they have to put it all in this episode.
yippee, I can't wait to do season 3 again, starting now. But like, what if they were boys? What if we did gender bit season boys? 3?
But under an apocalypse, so it's, oh, we're in the flashback still. Never mind. I'm sorry, everyone. Never mind. We're still in the flashback. Okay.
Yeah, my favorite part of season 8, Apocalypse, where we're not in the apocalypse. That's the cool part, I think. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. Beautiful.
Yippee!
Well, thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I hope to see you more for them reaping their not doing their job for 3 episodes next time.
It's gonna be great.
Yeah.
So long.
Bye. Bye.